So you pisuk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you could let your imagination go with those terms, and you could see them pisu rock slowly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Pisukatapang, and they're really walking, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
Pisukdoktuk, taking a walk.
Very natural process. That's what kids do with their natural language development. They play with words. You ever heard of just repeating words over and playing with them around? And even, of course, that's when they start learning when to use them, too, because they try it in different places.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I think. There's where I see the two major areas so far. You tell me, but it seems... one is in procedures, to make sure they totally understand that administration procedure, and that has to be done in both Inupiaq and English. And then beyond that, we need to tie the language development probably into that schema, the low band thing, and what I've done. And then I suppose tied to that is a third one, which is essentially the incorporation of that into lesson plans. What is the major lesson plan? I'd say there's a model of a lesson plan rather than a specific set of plans. Now then what you folks could do is pull all the material into that and say, well, that's concept development, this is specific language practice, this is communication. So you can help the teacher center that. But I think if they knew that, there's no question in my mind that you could set up the concept development language walls just like so. Because you have all your topics there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You would have to give them examples of that, and through workshops show them how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But once they saw that, if I spent a day with them doing that sort of thing, if they didn't know language walls, they would when I finished with them. They'd get excited about them, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we have probably the possibilities for doing this. And I think they feel better about the lessons this year. You know, that that was a predictable thing last year, you know. When you left here or were here last year, we said, there's just a beginning is what we're doing.
That's right.
We've got to come back and do it again.
That's right.
Like we said, we wanted to try to do it with even English teachers, which never happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now Steve's problem is more technical, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He needs
yes.
the kind of backup and so forth. But you would answer that through that continuum and through relating that to final scores. That's the way I see doing that. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, because he needs his answers. He needs some good answers for the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And his principals. Mm-hmm. And principals whose task it is now to administer tests in their sites. We told them, well, we've developed the process for you now. It's yours.
That's starting in the fall?
No, they're doing it in the spring.
Oh, they're doing it this spring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, spring is... Has spring sprung?
Just about, because they're about ready to end school.
Yeah.
We've just got, I think, all but one site, the RAM card's working.
Well, what I'm saying is for those...
His testing has done.
For his purpose, it'll be the next go-around,
yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, for that, we need to give him, I need to give him a technical manual that he can have in his hand and says this is what it is.
Because you'll need to explain it to new principals.
Yeah.
To the school board and to the Department of Education.
You'll need to, I don't think he could get it just reading. I think it needs to be verbalized and... Because I think he's... We've had enough discussions with him, and Jane has gone to one of the sites with him to have enough questions, and also the demands of the Department of Education, you know, and the teachers saying why, principals, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
he needs solid information. And if we could, for my part, if I could learn it well enough to develop instructions, we could
mm-hmm.
we could structure it in English, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We could write it down in English,
mm-hmm.
and then I could just convert it to Inupiaq.
That's right.
And,
yeah. If I answered all your questions about it to me, then. Mm-hmm. Then you could put it in Inupiaq form.
And put it, as long as you have time, put it in proper sequence
mm-hmm.
of the testing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and transcribing.
That's right.
Scoring.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's another part that we haven't discussed. The use. How
of the information?
Back, yeah, how do we use the information to bring it back to benefit the kids?
Mm-hmm. I think that the place that makes, where the most benefit could come is relating those scores directly to a continuum. To me, that would be the most important place to put it. Because you have to go back to my comments about that language development being general
mm-hmm.
and movable. I mean, you go from different levels all the time. So within a language sample, you have kids who may be doing over a spectrum, a band of activities, language activities. So if the teacher could understand that score is indicative of a band of activities, that the place to be moving them is toward through that band into the next one,
mm-hmm.
then you could do it through a language continuum.
Mm-hmm.
It is really more, there are two terms. It's more notional use of language and functional use of language, and I'll explain those the way I see them. Well, there's three. I guess there's the mechanics of language. Now, if kids are very, very limited, then I can probably tell the teacher on the continuum they should be moving up to basic sentences and expanded sentences. How do you get expanded sentences? Well, you add single words, color words, adverbs, or you add phrases such as prepositional phrases or the like. And we should give them a lot of examples of that, telling where something is, how something is. So we could tie it right back with the prompting technique. Tell me about
mm-hmm.
those people. Tell me where those people are and so forth in teaching technique. Then we move into the notional functional use of language. Because if kids have enough mechanics of the language, the thing that is going to increase their language functioning will be being able to use language for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to explain something. Not just to tell about a picture. The telling about a picture is the first and most commonly used technique. And I've amended the process into that specific tell me about it, name something, tell me more about it, tell me about it, and so
mm-hmm.
forth, and the non-correction and so forth. But essentially, getting kids to explain how to do something is one way.
Mm-hmm.
Getting kids to be able to defend something, an idea. There are all levels of language usage.
Yeah, that would
usage.
Be a higher order. What's
oh, yes,
mean?
it's very high
yeah,
level.
Yeah, then. Mm-hmm.
That's why I grabbed it, because
mm-hmm.
explaining is nowhere near as high level
describing
as defending
an over
idea.
Here and be defending
that
over
is
here.
Right.
Would be the end
but
of
you
it.
See, there are, in fact, a whole series of functional uses
mm-hmm.
of language. Language for specific purposes. A language to convince someone of something. You see, all of this is tied into language development.
Yeah, I think that would help our bilingual people in not just mechanically
That's right.
doing the testing
That's
and the transcribing and the scoring.
Right.
They would
yep.
understand the philosophy
That's
behind
right.
it, which would give them purpose.
They
you know?
Need to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need to see, they need to have a Making Language Come Alive workshop, or they need to get the concepts of that workshop. Because that is what is, that's turning people on all over the country. I mean, the concept is right, because I've seen it accepted by so many diverse groups that I know the idea is absolutely valid for them. But it is saying that. It is saying language is not just mechanical manipulation. Language is using it for different purposes, in different places, with different groups, at different levels, which is what we do every single day with our own language. But our curriculum doesn't do that. And making language more precise is essentially getting kids to realize what language is and when it's effective, when it doesn't work. And the way they learn that natively is by trying to get something physically, and it doesn't, they don't get it, they know they haven't asked in the right way for it. I mean, at very basic beginning level.
You know, I've been trying to translate this, and I've been thinking of my recent visit with Nellie, to say, what can we say to her that we can also say to Arlene or Kathy or Dora or somebody that will get that to happen in the classroom? And I think if we structure in reinforcement activities that say, play this, which is,
mm-hmm.
Okay, when you get something, that's the thing that I must have lit up on, okay? I've got it. Now you have to ask me enough questions that describes it so I can give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
That hide, that go out of the room game, those kids love that.
Yeah.
But you have to ask enough questions.
Let me give you an example of that. Mm-hmm. I was on the Pima Reservation, and to make a long story short, I was told that these kids would not respond to me because I was strange, white, and they didn't know who I was, and, you know, old adult as well. These were kindergarten kids. There were a bunch, and I didn't do this on purpose. I did it merely by accident. There were a bunch of kids, about six of them, sitting at a table, and they had these little ViewMasters machines, you know, the little pictures in them, and they were sitting there, and they were wasting their time. I could see them just sitting there doing, you know, throwing these things in, and I thought, I should be doing something. And being a teacher, I sat down with them, and I said, what are you doing? And they laughed, you know, they looked at me, and they just kind of went up, they'd poke each other, and they'd look the other way, and then they'd look at me. And so they, you know, there was the initial shyness and silliness about this person doing this. Finally, one of the kids handed me a ViewMaster, and I took it, and I said, what's in it? And he laughed, wouldn't tell me anything, and I handed it back to him without looking at it. And so they took it. Another kid handed me one, and I said, he had looked at it, and then he handed it to me, and I said, what is it? And he laughed, and wouldn't do it, handed it back. I did that for about a minute. They kept handing them to me. They liked the idea of making fun of me and doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept going along with it. And finally a kid said to me, a boat. And I took it and I looked at it and I said, sure is, that's a boat, all right. Yep, that's a boat, big one. Handed it back. Another kid handed me, I said, what is it? He said, a big bear. And I looked at it. I said, that's right, it's a big bear, all right. Handed it back. Another kid handed it. I had those kids talking in sentences, describing things for me. See, what I was doing, very knowledgeably and with intent, I was first of all insisting that they tell me without saying so.
Mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't play their game of looking at it and saying, oh, look at there's a great big boat, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's what they would have done for me. So I insisted that they say something. Once I got the something, then I started modeling for them what it should be. See, he said a boat, and I said, sure is, that's a boat, putting it into a sentence. That's a big boat, big one too. Handed it back to him. The next kid said a big bear, because they picked up the model. See, they had the language, but the prompting technique was such that they were unaware of what I was doing. It was not a structured lesson of that sort.
Mm-hmm. Now, Nellie can do that, but I cannot teach her to do that. you have to, or somebody who speaks in Inupiaq to her, to show her, in Inupiaq, about
how to do it. If Myra's going to be here next year, she needs to learn that.
She isn't.
She's made up her mind?
Yep.
But whoever is going to be here should know that. I mean, it is a very basic technique. And you see, it's like the language wall. It's a very fun technique to do. It's not terribly complicated, but there are rules. Just as with the Bynel testing, there are rules that you must follow.
Well, if our ECE people and kindergarten people had those picture things, and we can,
or anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
The device.
Picture things, those devices that they could use in Inupiaq. Yeah?
Well, if they had talk tiles, if they had anything, and we've got loads of things. It's just the technique that pulls it out. And that's the drill for the teacher to pull that out.
Try it. Yeah, they have, you have to have them show you that they understand the technique.
But you know what we did last year? I analyzed that when we got all through with that. You for 1 week was a good language person. Irene, who did one just about the same thing as you did. And we came along, we introduced too much
material, yeah.
Yeah, and we need to do that particular thing. The whole point of what we're trying to do is to teach them to talk with their kids, language.
Yeah.
And we need to be real sure. But I think they could catch on with each other and let them go and do it with each other in Inupiaq.
Sure, they could.
I couldn't teach Nellie, but I could teach Dora or Violet or one of them who could do it with Nellie, so we should pair them up differently than we did before.
Yeah, it's a technique workshop, but they need to not hear it explained. They need to hear it explained and then do it.
Yeah, but they need to hear it explained in their terms.
Absolutely.
Which I can't do, but some of the others of them can. You know?
No, they need to keep trying it out. But you've got to have enough monitoring so it doesn't get out
of whack. That's another thing we didn't do very well. We threw so much that we didn't practice so much.
No, it has to be monitored.
That, you know?
Because I'm looking at this Bynel thing, and I've met this before. It's not just here. It's when the training has been done and then kind of let pass
on. See, none of us have actually been trained, and we had no way to train the English-speaking teachers. And we took a lot of time training the others, and I don't think either method has done us very well.
The
thing to do is to train those principals.
See,
that is
correct. See, in Los Angeles, we started off with a central core of people. They had to train 2,000 teachers in that city for their testing. So they started off with a core of 40, and the core then went out to different sites and trained others. And then every so often that core would come back. I did. Well, I taught the core, and then I monitored the core because they came back to me with questions, problems, and so forth. Then they would go out and they'd monitor each other and monitor the people that they taught. So there was a system of watching to make sure it was
okay,
all right.
So I've been putting in here, you know, these little things. What we're going to have to do is come up with a plan on Thursday. So I've been listening, okay, plan. One of the things we have to do is to plan. We have to develop a training plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And because I think that would, and a monitoring plan. And I think that has to involve principals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to involve Inupiaq teachers, not just the principal, because some of those principals could really care less. Because it has to be done. I mean, you know, I think of Ed lots of times. We have a principal who, you know, takes the stuff home and says, you be in charge of that. So you give the training to him, he kind of listens, he asks a few questions, so when you write your report, it looks good, he's been here, right? And then he goes home and says, it's all your thing, baby. Okay, then you come back, and then he comes over and says, I just heard this brought in $600,000 to our district. It's really important, isn't it? Not to mention the fact that it could tell us something about language.
Yeah.
That there's been a whole year of training and he hasn't really participated in it. Yeah. But it, another thing that's important for him to say mm-hmm. is, it is important, but the reason was wrong.
Right.
But that's not an unusual individual.
No.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think a monitoring plan and develop it in both languages. So we ought to have a trainer that really is monitoring it in both. Mm-hmm. And I think lots of them, a core perhaps. I like to see us doing training in village areas. I think, you know, it makes a lot more sense. We're crossing now with language. I think we ought to do something different too. Also, commonality is a different kind of commonality. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Geographical commonality. We're now training people in language commonality. So we gather all the beginners together and all the intermediates and across the district. I think another way we ought to cut it is those folks and these folks and these folks would be a lot easier. Because they could then, they interchange each other a lot.
They would interact more.
And they're, you know, cousins and they'd have some payoff for us. Yeah. We've got another thing to discuss. And I made not only a typing error in my errors, but I also put some bottom part on there we don't need. As we go, we adopted almost across the board to start with Barrow's determination of the home language, and I shuddered. Remember I talked to you way back about that?
I have a vague memory of that.
Well, I remember it because I've been shuddering night after night sometimes about this. We did modify it after I learned from Mike Travis that, and I did call Bumgardner after I came aboard here to say, Dave, let me ask you just a few questions. Like, was the purpose of your scoring process? Oh, remember, we looked at that when you were here at that time, that chart with the squares on it.
Oh, yeah.
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 Was the purpose of it to do that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, mainly the point was that there would be more money gained for the district.
That's
because
right.
The kids all had any back home language. Well, we tried to unskew that in the middle of the stream, and we're still now going back with the state, and I developed another whole questionnaire in Kivalina the other day trying to ask the question, do your children hear any back? But we really have to go back and look at that.
Okay.
And the state regs closely.
Yeah, that's individual. It changes from state to state. So
well,
that
see, we have that extra category.
Three categories of English only or NPAC only or both.
But we don't. We have one more category than everybody else. And that E category, remember,
that
for us
E
is
category.
The village English. Uh-huh. And that, I think is a disservice on one hand, but it's a category that the state fought and accepts.
Fought for
with the feds. Oh yeah, they fought hard and long over that one. 2 to 3 years as a pattern.
So it says if they speak village English, then they are eligible for special services.
Yeah, and they don't, if children, see, they're trying to get at this, and it's true in New Mexico, in Spanish children, when the third generation, everybody comes from Mexico, they all speak Spanish. They've been there one generation, and most of them speak Spanish, but the next generation down, when the old folks speak Spanish, the parents understand it and speak it back and forth, and the children speak a lot of English and not very much Spanish, except a word here and there. That's village English, or village Spanish.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
Got it, yeah.
And it might be, I saw a church, as much as that, with a language pattern, or it might be some other movement of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Spanish is a lot more like Western English, but any of those combinations. If I see a church or a share, you know they're Spanish spoken in that home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The question to the parents is, do you speak Spanish at home? And the parents say no, because we know that you want everybody to speak English. Now the same thing with us. Do you speak Inupiaq? Do the children speak Inupiaq? No, we went to school knowing that you didn't, see, like Rachel said,
yeah.
you went to school knowing that you didn't want us to speak English.
Well, I'm glad to see you're still going at it.
Oh, yeah, and we're still recording.
Now, unfortunately, I'm going to have to run you out of here.
Bye. Okay. Oh, because you got a meeting.
Yeah, I've got a meeting with the board on sex education and the curriculum.
Well, that's
there were several things I saw as being key to our discussion yesterday. As we started discussing test procedures, I think I realized that there are really no, there has not been direct training here by me, for example, of people. And I would think it would be wise to establish a core of resource people who can, in fact, continue the training for others, so that you're assured of a continuity of procedure. Basic to that is the development of a specific script and procedural guide for testing that is very, very structured, and so that it has specific requirements.
Before going
steps.
Further, would it be possible, you know, we have such a high turnover right here, it's hard to train people and keep them on. They seem to move on. Would it be possible to use instructional television and say, through you and the instrument that we have here, put together a training tape that could serve in lieu of, say, trained individuals?
Sure. I would be glad to do that. I think it would be an excellent idea. I have some tapes of me doing the testing, but I think we need something that is local and directly
applicable. There's no
doubt
about it. You need something that is local, and you need some local people involved in it to add to the curriculum.
One way to do that would be to have me work with kids and demonstrate with kids, giving the test to youngsters in English, and then have a native doing it in Inupiaq as a mirror reflection of what I'm doing, and then subtitle that or summarize it in some fashion to review the key points, and probably also do it in a small manual that could be readily referred to without turning on a television. But I think that's a very viable way to go about doing it. You certainly have the equipment to do that, sure. I think that's a valid way to do it. And it would, the major point is to make sure that the continuity is assured so that you have continuing training available for people who are new.
So we could then, maybe before he leaves, or I don't know when would be the most appropriate time, but to develop some strategies for putting together such a monster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've done a fair amount of that sort of videotaping and training taping, as a matter of fact. So I have some knowledge about that. We could probably sketch out what it is and how it could be done. I'd like to talk with your technical people just briefly at any rate at some point, if they're still here, just to know what's available and how. The intercutting and so forth is not highly technical. You don't have to do a lot of that. So we're not talking about production in the sense of a lot of production. If you have good planning, you don't need to do that, and if you're willing to do several takes of the same thing. But we are talking about something that should be effective as it's watched, so we want to give it the most impact it can have to make sure that it's not something amateur. I did a tape, just as an example, I did a tape in New York State for their State Department of Education when they adopted the Bynum. And the original thought was to do it as, not mine, but theirs, was to do it as a training session which would be taped, which is really unreasonable, because the training session is about 3 hours long, and no one will watch 3 hours of videotape even if I'm on it. So at any rate, I said, no, that's not the way to do it. So what we did was a training session, and then we would interrupt the training session and start the tape, and I would essentially summarize, but not appearing to summarize to someone who was watching the tape. So in a very concise fashion did the training on tape, and that works fairly well. And I think
well,
it's a good plan.
probably then before you leave, I could set you up with a couple of people over there on instructional television.
Okay.
And we could sit down and discuss the process.
Good. Okay. And then we'll have
I think
to
Don is out of town. I'm not sure when he's going to be back. I don't think until the end of the week that Steve is here.
Steve and Bob are there. And probably Skip and Rachel would want to do that.
Then, Rachel, you can help me identify the native speakers that I would be using as demonstrators, because I have to be sure that they are carrying out what I'm doing. Okay, see, it's key that you are the resource for assuring that what I'm telling them to do is done in Yupik. Otherwise, I'd have no way of knowing.
Well, we all have our limitations.
But I think
as expert as we are,
it really, if we work together on that, I think we can assure that it comes off correctly. You know, there is that Burden article is very interesting. I read it through last night a couple times because I was so interested in it. He's talking most specifically. I was telling Steve. I'm sorry to repeat this, but I was telling Steve about that this morning. The other critical articles of the vinyl are people who have their mindset about a certain way of testing language, which is discrete point testing. And the test is not a discrete point test. It is so obvious that I don't know why people don't realize that, but they don't. Or they don't want to realize it, I think. And the Burden article is very interesting because he is talking about the effectiveness of the technique of testing language in a vinyl fashion. In fact, he continually calls it the vinyl technique. And that has been picked up by a number of people in articles as being an effective means. Now, what he points out is that the strategy is correct. What you have to also look at, however, are some of what he calls discourse analysis.